This episode of Film Sack is brought to you by Casper, an online retailer of premium mattresses for a fraction of the price. Because everyone deserves a great night's sleep, get $50 off any mattress purchase by visiting casper.com/filmsack and enter the promo code FILMSACK.
What if I told you that even the worst neighborhood in America could be made completely safe? And what if I told you that this could be accomplished without risking the life of one single law enforcement officer? How do I know this? Because it's happening right now in every country in the world but this one.
You look like crap. This is Film Sack. Oh, sure.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to Film Sack. This is Film Sack, mining the very depths of film entertainment for all mankind, episode 253. My name is Scott Johnson. I'm joined today by Brian. I kind of like this first gray suit, too, Dunaway.
Oh, hi. All right, guys. I just got the phone call we have all been dreading. It appears that the new state-of-the-art RoboCop cyborg Detroit dude is headed our way. But it's okay. We're the number one crime syndicate drug runners in Detroit, and I do have a plan. Step one, turn off the lights, because everybody knows cyborgs can't see in the dark, right? Step two, shoot him in the face. So if you guys took the shoot him in the face webinar and then the follow-up certification test from last month, then we should be fine. Okay, everybody who attended the webinar and got the certification, hold up your card. Ah, shit.
Yep, thought of that the entire time. Drove me crazy. Also with us, Brian, biggest superhero actor crossover of all time, Ebbett.
Sir, I've got the latest poll numbers about RoboCop, and I don't think you're going to like it. Yeah? Yeah, I know the people wanted a man inside a machine, combining the accuracy and the power of an exoskeleton with the humanity and responsibility of the human inside it, but, well, he's just not testing very well. Yeah, Joel Kinnaman is all right, I guess, but people just don't believe that he's actually got any human in him. Yeah, I saw The Killing, and he was great in that, but I think what the public is clamoring for is to put a man inside the machine. Yes, I'll get Nathan Lane on the phone immediately.
Nicely love done.
Hey, there's no Randy. Where was the Randy?
Yeah, there's no Randy, everyone.
What?
Yeah, Randy is on the road. He's going to Texas this weekend and was unable to attend today's taping.
Randy's other favorite saying besides aloha is yeehaw.
Yeah, yeehaw, right? You know, he knows where he comes from. He's got some stuff he's got to go take care of down there. So we are soldiering on this week without him, doing a little three-man action, if you know what I'm saying.
Ooh, yo.
Hubba hubba.
Putting a man in it.
Ooh. The movie is RoboCop, the 2014 remake, reboot, all right? Mm-hmm. So this is a movie that we have been threatening to watch for a long time. We're going to do it. I don't know if I would say famously, but we have watched the first two RoboCop movies, the ones from the 80s.
You went ahead and Freudian slipped it right in there, didn't you, Scott?
Who had 9 minutes?
RoboCock. Great. So we've seen those. We've had our fun with those, right? But I have very much wanted to see the new one and held off because I knew that one day we would do it here. Normally, this would be something I would have seen, maybe even in theaters or something. But when it came out, I went, oh, no, I gotta save this up.
Yeah.
And I know everyone else has either probably seen it or this is their first. We'll see. Yeah, but it's your first viewing, right? You
waited. First viewing, yep.
Yep, and Dunaway, you saw it a couple times, right?
I watched it the first time by myself out of curiosity. The second time I watched it with my now fiancé. Mm-hmm. Thank you very much.
Congratulations.
And she fell asleep about 5 minutes in.
So. Oh, good Lord. Wow, thanks. She didn't make it very far at all.
Maybe longer than five, but not much more.
Well, we'll let Scott Fletcher explain a little bit more, and then we'll dive deep into the reboot of RoboCop.
RoboCop. When Detroit cop and family man Alex Murphy is critically injured in the line of duty, a robotics firm transforms him into an experimental crime-fighting cyborg. Though he remains haunted by his human past in this reboot of the 1980s sci-fi classic. You see, this reading wasn't as good as the original either.
All right. Oh, I need to make something known right up front. And I don't know. I don't know if you guys are going to differ with me or not. I have no prediction on this.
Okay.
Because I've never talked to Brian about whether he liked it or not when he first saw it. Right. And of course, it's your first time along with me. We're virgins, robo virgins.
Terminology, yes.
Opera virginity.
May peace be with you.
I really, really enjoyed it, like a lot more, way more than I thought I was going to. And I'm not even saying, oh, my expectations are so low, this was better than the crap I thought it was going to be, or any of that. I feel like it genuinely was really good, and. Here's what I know people are saying to themselves right now, and I know a few in the community are already saying this because they're reaming me on Twitter for last night saying that I thought the movie was pretty rad so far. I was about halfway through.
Mm. Oh, so you've already even tested the waters with a comment on Twitter about it.
Yeah, Iceworm's the most vitriolic. He thinks I'm up in the night, but I really think that it's not okay. So the big complaint has been that the movie doesn't have the satire or the social commentary that the original did. The original being like this, look at this future where advertising is everything and, you know, I'd buy that for a dollar and all this stupid stuff that we turn into, that's all missing. And what I would argue is that it's not missing. Those aren't things that just happened that were smart moves. Those were Verhoeven things. Right, those were right. That's Paul Verhoeven doing what Paul Verhoeven does, which is make everything seem just a little out there and wild and whatever. And that's okay. I don't mind that. I like him. His movies are interesting. But I kind of liked a more straight take of near future. Here's some cool technology. Here's a corporation kind of run amok. In fact, a lot more subtle. And the way things go down at that company are much more subtle than just some guy twisting his mustache and going, I'm going to kill everybody. Like you can kind of see how they got themselves in the mess they got into.
Yeah.
The moralistic questions and quandaries that were in the first movie about what it means to be a good cop and then maintain that and be honorable and all that other stuff, that's still humanity. Here.
Yeah.
It's still here. Yeah. Where's the humanity in the machine and all that? That's all still here. And then just take good actors and a lot of them, like kind of a shocking number of actors that are good that we all know, put them in a movie where they can do what they do best, which is act well, have a pretty good, I mean, I'm not going to tell you that this is, you know, the King's Speech or anything, but it's, you know, it's got a decent story and really good action, some great scenes and great sound work and all that stuff. And you've made a movie I'm digging. Like, you totally dug it. I walked away going, man, nothing wrong with the new RoboCop. What's all the bad mouthing in the nerd community? I know it's easy to just hate on remakes the minute they're made, but did I really want to see an exact Verhoeven ripoff of the first one? I didn't. I wanted to see something, a different take. And this is a different take.
It's a really good point because the first thing you do when you see something that's being remade is you fight against it that, oh man, they're going to take, you know, what was funny about the first one and just try and rehash it. Or they're going to take what, they're going to ruin my memory of the first, what's the word I'm looking for? Sentimental.
They're, right. They're going to Lucas it right on up. Right.
Yeah. Right. Exactly. But then when they don't do that, you know, people tend to rage against that as well. Mm-hmm. Right. It's like, oh, they didn't put any of the comedy that I want in here. They didn't take any of the best parts of the first one and try and rehash it in here. What a piece of crap.
Yeah. You can't win.
I think the problem is, I think that a lot of nerds have a legitimate gripe as far as the difference between the original RoboCop and this one. And a lot of people probably put it in the realm of, well, you know, it was kitschy. It was, you know, it was over the top. It was wild. But the things that I think they didn't realize or don't realize that was in the original that's not in this one is the all important character interaction. Mm-hmm. Each one of these characters, it feels like an independent person, but this is a very personal story. And in the original, Murphy had a lot of very close friends and a lot of really venomous enemies. And this one, it's more like they treat him like a product. And, you know, and even his relationship with his wife is not well explored. There's some tremendous acting and some implied that there is some great relationship there, but we never become a part of that, any of those relationships long enough that they just kind of keep jumping around to the next plot point that they're trying to get to.
I'll agree with that. They don't spend a lot of time, like,
no character development, very little character development.
But it was enough for me. I filled in the gaps. It wasn't like a thing the explanation of, you know, Alex Murphy and his family, they kind of brush over that stuff and make it quick. But I think part of that is trusting us to fill in those gaps. Because to me, that stuff's easy. It's like, oh, yeah, well, of course, he was married. He was happy. He was a family man. He was a hardworking cop. It was a rough time. Detroit's a butthole. And, you know,
right. But in order for me to feel emotional attachment to the character RoboCop himself, I need a reason to like or dislike him. And really, I didn't really have a reason. He was done wrong, but he wasn't done that wrong. And it's just like, there was never an extreme. There was no,
he was done wrong because he was killed.
let me tell you who I root for, who is like the best character they've developed in recent years that's just been a straight script. And that's John Wick. You watch that movie and it's a revenge flick. And so it's so easy to feel for him. You just absolutely feel for him 100%. And you want him to kill these people. Yeah. This RoboCop, the only thing that emotionally touched me was the scene where they remove his body and it's just his head and lungs in that one hand.
That was pretty intense, I thought.
That was amazing scene.
Yeah.
I joke on, you know, Joel Kinnaman, but I think in that scene, and you see him like looking at himself in the mirror and going, holy crap. And you kind of think of how would I feel in a situation like that? I'd be like, well, geez, just let me die then. I mean, if this is all you've got of me, then just, you know.
Yeah, you've got my hand. Lungs.
Did I mention it like a giant cock and balls? Did you? I tried not to see that.
Well, you couldn't help it, dude.
Right.
With
one free hand. Where was the Freudians in that was just.
Well, so I have some background on that. So RoboCop having one human hand in his final form is a nod to the original movie where the technicians argue with Bob Morton about whether to salvage Murphy's arm after he was killed in the line of duty, quote unquote killed. In the original film, Morton cautiously nixes the idea and the decision is made to remove Murphy's surviving arm. In this one, they're like, no, we're going to keep it. And that was like a direct nudge in the direction of the old one. There were a few of those in here. You know, you got Rorschach at one point says, I wouldn't buy that for a dollar or something. Yeah. A few things here and there, which were fine.
You're coming with me.
Yeah. Right? Yeah.
The original suit, you know, that.
Sure.
And the music thing, at the logo and stuff like that. So,
you know, you've got all this work that you need to do to take. All right. This fallen police officer who's clinging to life. Apparently you can't save. You know, even though he was just outwardly burnt on the outside, apparently he can't save bone or muscle or anything like that. He's just completely wrecked. You're going to go to the effort to save a hand? Like, I can understand the head, the heart, the lungs. Sure, makes sense. Right. Makes perfect sense. But they have to create a whole extra little doodad to support this hand?
Yeah. It did seem a little on the...
it's a little extra work that you probably didn't need to do. It's like, by the way, we also saved your hand. Oh, thank you. Thank you for saving my hand. That's,
now I can stroke my face.
That makes me feel just a little bit more human now because I've got a hand.
Well, I think... So yes, you're right about... I think it's a little bit ridiculous, but later on, there's like a moment where he's clutching his wife's hand and son's hand on the roof, and he's doing it with his real hand.
Sure.
It makes story sense, right?
Sure.
Yeah, well, it makes payoff sense. I don't know if it makes story sense, but it makes payoff sense because you're getting that at the end.
But once again, Dunaway alluded to it already, but here's yet another movie with either robot, cyborg, man, whatever, with a face where the face is exposed. The only fleshy entrance point to his brain, which is keeping it all working, exposed all the time. Like, that should have been, I mean, I'm not, maybe I'm arguing for something that people would have been really mad about because they want the RoboCop suit to kind of be reminiscent of the RoboCop suit and the jaw and mouth were always visible. Mm-hmm. But it's in the original and in this, it's just like, dude, there's your target. Quit shooting right. him in the chest and the arms and the feet and the legs and the whatnot. Mm-hmm. Get him in the little face hole.
Right. Right. It's like this perfectly exposed thing. Yeah. Instead of giving him like a thing that completely covers his face, mm-hmm. because why not?
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah.
We're going to just expose it, make it flip up as much as Tobey Maguire's Spider-Man mask.
Sure.
Right. Why and that, by not? The way, that helmet was just useless. Every time he got in a fight, it was getting blown up. And
oh, yeah.
Shattered.
Yeah.
That's true, but it looked cool as hell. I think
it did look cool. I think it looked cool, but it also looked generic. The one thing about the original RoboCop, I did not look generic. I mean, when I saw the original RoboCop, I'm like, this is like nothing I have seen before. This is fantastic.
Well, at least they gave you a couple of nods to that, right? Like there's the when he first gets the suit and he's in a silver, very reminiscent of the original suit. Mm-hmm. And then later there's another version of that they show being transforming or whatever. And then they decide to go black and sleek and he becomes basically Robot Ninja Man.
Right.
But I thought all those designs looked really, really great. And I really don't have a problem with that black one. I think it looked great. I think when he had his dopamine levels all jacked with and he became more robotic, more robot than man.
Right.
I thought he was just a badass. Like, yeah. That stuff was great. And I also really liked that they didn't do the typical, he starts out more machine than man. So here's the stereotype. He starts out more machine than man, and as he goes along, he'll have a little flashback. Oh, what was that? A flash of something with a lady and a kid. Oh, it must be my family. Right? Like, right. That's usually the way you go, and then he finds the humanity later.
Yeah,
this one had a lot of and this one had a lot of humanity early that got changed slowly as they had to tune him down and tune up the robot part. He became more machine later, and I thought that was kind of a cool take. Like, he was very emotionally unstable early. He was very upset. Wants to just sort of end his life. Tries to talk to the doctor into doing it. As he's doing police work, his emotions are too strong. And then when they finally take all that away, and he's kind of marching around like original RoboCop, I thought that was really well done and felt more organic to me than the old way.
Mm-hmm. Right. And they set that up. I mean, all the way from they set the rules early on with the guy in the hospital that was trying to play the guitar. And he was saying, I can't play the guitar without emotion. But you can't have emotion and operate the equipment because that's a shortcoming or limitation. Yeah. So
there's some nice foreshadowing there with that guy.
Right. Right. Yeah. Like I said, back to Scott's original point. Yes. Do I think this is a solid movie? And I think this is one of the reasons why it gets such a 50% rating across the board in most places, because it's a competent movie, but we just have these expectations that it's going to be, you know, it's going to be off the chain, violent like the first one was.
I don't know. I mean, it's just so dang boring, you know?
Exactly.
It's
very generic.
It's a competent reboot, but stripping away everything, pun intended, stripping away everything that we know about the original RoboCop. And let's say they are starting from ground zero, starting fresh. Hey, here's a brand new property we're creating called RoboCop in 2014, 2015, whenever this thing came out. It's still, you know, it's got all of the stuff you expect in movies right now.
Yeah.
Right.
All those typical formulas, but there's just no heart to it. There's no, again, I'm not trying to be punny here, because but there's no soul to it. It just feels right. So
robotic.
It feels so, hey, here's all the formula pieces we need for an action film like this. Mm-hmm. Right. And we're just going to do all these things and not kind of inject any sort of fun into the movie.
So it's
not a fun movie. So
it's a little safe is what you're saying.
It's a little safe. Yeah, I mean, exactly. They do everything right. They do everything that you're supposed to do in movies these days. Everything you're supposed to do with an action movie, a sci-fi action movie, except inject any sort of humor or feeling or surprise into it.
Right. Yeah, there really is no humor in this. I'll give you that.
The only bit is the whole, what happens if I tase a metal suit with an asshole in it?
Yeah.
Something like that. That's the only bit of humor.
Right.
You're right. They didn't inject
Jackie
much.
Earl Haley, man. He was You really hated it. You could really hate that man.
I freaking love that guy. I do too. Everything he's in is great. And I wanted to bring up a tiny point about, well, two things. So the movie was way less violent than the original, obviously. Mm-hmm. It was rated PG-13. However, the director really wanted Jose Padilla, is his name. Brazilian director, first American film. He wanted it to be a hard R, and him and Kinnaman both fought for it, according to the trivia. But didn't in the ever-expanding budget, I guess, they went from a $60 million budget to a balloon to about $120 million. That's double for those keeping track at home.
Right.
Studio executives were forced to deliver a PG-13 rating in hopes of to recoup some of that budget they spent on the film by having a wider audience. The director really hated that and was pissed, and they cut all his, like, I guess he came into this thing, according to a lot of other stuff he said, with the intent of making, you know, at least that side of it, this kind of gore fest was supposed to happen. And did in some director's cut of the film.
And it could have been amazing because we saw the head and lung scenes. I mean, that was just out of this world.
That felt like tonally, like it was part of a different cut of the film.
Right.
Exactly. Not that it was super gross or anything. It had a rawness to it that made you wonder, wow, I wonder if the rest of the movie would have been this raw.
Yeah.
Right.
Wonder what this would have felt like. And I'm on the one hand, I'm sad that we didn't get whatever his vision was. But on the other hand, I can totally, you know, watch this with, you know, a 10-year-old kid and they'd have a good time watching RoboCop be a cool cop or whatever. So right, I understand what they're thinking about recouping their money, and they can broaden that audience. But, you know, like a lot of these stories, when a movie comes out, basically, and you're right, 50-50 across the board. Rotten Tomatoes, 50-50. It's about 6 out of 10 on IMDb.
Even the reviews are boring.
Yeah. Right. The reviews are just kind of average.
And what can you really say? It was a good movie.
I guess that's why I'm so surprised that I liked it as much as I liked it.
It was a movie. I'll give it that.
I mean, how many more MFs do you think Samuel L. Jackson dropped in the director's cut?
A lot more. A lot more. I'm guessing
like hearing him get bleeped out in a movie.
Yeah, that was great.
That's fantastic.
Especially shit, because like he'd say, right, and people had said that word. That was their swear word for the movie. Like that, if you got like 10 shits in the movie.
Right.
And they bleeped out his version of it, which is like just.
Didn't even touch that. That's hilarious.
Yeah, I think I captured it later.
The one person who should let their shits fly free is getting their shits censored.
So
he was an interesting character. That goes back to the Verhoeven kind of.
Yeah, it's the only part I felt like they stuck in there, don't you think? Like that was only bit where it felt like. I felt like there was a meeting at some point for this movie where they said, all right, we have to bring in the kind of crazy media side that we were that we were showing, where, you know, basically television had lost its mind, and this was the version they came up with. And sadly, it was, you know, not that different than modern 24-hour news network shows with a host.
He would totally be on Fox. I mean, Pat Novak would be on Fox for sure.
Yeah.
It almost felt like as much an homage to Starship Troopers.
Oh yeah, a little bit.
Because you're watching a movie or a TV show inside the movie about the movie.
Right. Yeah, which was also Verhoeven, which is a very Verhoeven thing to do. Sure. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I feel like, I guess maybe that's partly why I liked it, because some of Verhoeven's stuff grates on me a little bit. Like I don't hate those old movies. I really like Total Recall. I really like, you know, I like the original RoboCop. I don't know. There's something about I feel like he's constantly flipping me off, and maybe that makes him cool and awesome. I don't know. But I feel like I'm just getting the bird from Verhoeven every time I watch one of his movies.
Right.
And this was at least just like, no, just settle in and watch something different. And do I really want someone to try to fake to be like Verhoeven? Like you were saying earlier, Brian, regardless of the 50-50 or where people land on this movie, did we really want to see somebody do the exact same thing? I didn't.
It would not have been good if they had ripped it. But I think it needed to be Verhoeven. I mean, if nothing else, RoboCop, the original, was hip and cool, not necessarily because of all the campiness that Verhoeven brought. It was because it was Detroit, gritty violence that we had never seen.
That's the thing. Mm. Yeah, Detroit was a character. Detroit, like the emphasis on the first syllable. Detroit was a character in the first film. It was not a character in this one.
No, not at all. It felt like, you know what it reminded me of? It reminded me of Batman Begins.
Sure.
We've been used to multiple Batman films where, you know, Tim Burton and that other guy, Nipple Man, what's his name?
Schumacher.
Yeah. We're making Batman Land look like, you know, a giant fun land, like a crazy dark, you know, Gotham was this weird city. And then suddenly Batman Begins was like, nope, it's just like New York.
It's just a really gritty, you know, there's crime and stuff you're familiar with. It's just not over the top crime.
Yeah, and the sun comes out and gargoyles on buildings aren't the size of trucks and, you know, it's just a normal city. And I remember that
was cool, though. You got to admit, you've seen the Batman and Robin, right?
Mm-hmm.
That one's probably my favorite look for Gotham.
Really? Oh, I hated it.
Really?
Yeah.
I like that one.
I hated it. It reminded me of, like, I don't know. It's like the
giant statues everywhere.
It's like a fun house at Disneyland married the Birdcage and had a baby, and this is what came out
right,
of it.
Right. It's like it's very comic book. Mm-hmm. If that's kind of the thing you're looking for, then that I think it succeeds on that level. I think my perfect Gotham is actually somewhere between the Nolan and the Burton Gotham.
Yeah,
it needs to be slightly over the top, and I do want giant statues that look like, you know, like the Oscar award.
right
in the middle of my city holding up a bridge or something like that. I think that stuff I want in my Gotham, but I don't necessarily want the milkshake cup things on tops of buildings that are brainwaving people.
Yeah,
it
ended up being so funhouse.
You're right.
A nice combination of those things would be good. I do like big useless statues. They're one of my favorite things. Mainly because you're like, well, dude, this city's so bad, you should have spent that money on crime, not on another damn statue.
Right, exactly.
But so I made this reference earlier about how the movie has this huge crossover of superheroes, actors, and it's true. So check this out. We got Batman.
Mm-hmm.
Nick Fury.
Mm-hmm.
Rorschach.
Mm-hmm.
Commissioner Gordon. Then don't forget this new guy.
Oh, yeah.
Rick Flagg. He plays Rick Flagg in the new... the Suicide Squad, which is now I guess
so
he's a
Joel
villain.
Kinnaman, that's his
I guess that's a villain.
And
so
Michael
really
Keaton
count.
As Birdman.
Birdman.
Not really a hero as much as crazy.
Oh yeah, double it up.
I'm so glad that he did Birdman the same year as this, because this would be a hard thing to get past.
Yeah.
I think
he. How do I feel about him in this?
I mean, he's all right. He's Michael Keaton in this, you know, which is what you want.
I guess he is just Michael Keaton in this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You just said it. That's all there is to it. He's kind of just being Michael Keaton, and I don't think you expect much else. Commissioner Gordon, a.k.a. what's his bucket? I forgot his name already. What's wrong with me?
Gary
Oldman.
Yeah.
I always like Gary Oldman. Pretty much no matter what you put him in, I like him.
Yeah.
It's interesting, though. I feel like in the last few years, he's like this good guy and stuff now. Like he used to be always your villain, like Fifth Element or that Jean Reno movie, The Professional, or whatever. Yeah. He's usually just this horrible man. What was the Book of Eli? He was terrible in that. Right. Like he just had this long string of I'm bad, and then he was Sirius Black, which is a complicated character, but ultimately a good one in the Harry Potter series.
But such a great one if you hadn't read the books to that point, and I hadn't.
Mm-hmm.
So I didn't know what to expect from Sirius Black. And when you first see him, you think, oh my God, he's like, this guy's even worse than Voldemort, right? You're thinking, holy crap, look how crazy he is screaming on the front of that newspaper.
Yeah. And then he's like,
turns out to be the nicest guy in the
nicest guy in the show or in the movie. Yeah. And now this, I feel like this is all the roles he does. He's Commissioner Gordon all the time, or he's this kind of guy. And I don't know. I don't know if that was on purpose.
It's a good shift.
I don't know if it's on purpose or what, or people are just sick of hiring him to be the bad guy. I mean, the first time I ever saw him, he was Lee Harvey Oswald in JFK.
Right.
First role I ever saw him in.
I'm trying to remember Tinker Tailor Soldier Spy.
Oh, yeah. I meant to see that. Never did.
It was really good. But I'm trying to remember if he was the good guy or bad guy. And I think he was.
See, that's his thing.
I think he was the good guy, though, wasn't he?
He's a good guy. Yeah. Yeah, he is a good guy in that.
He was like an inspector, Mr. Inspector Man.
That's right.
Hey, not everybody can flip. That's a good trait.
Oh, yeah.
You think Samuel Jackson is a really good flipper? You think he's a flipper?
Who's it? Who?
Samuel Jackson
can play good or bad.
Oh, yeah. Sure. Yeah. Plays a good Nick Fury.
Did you see, was it The Kingsman just recently with him? And, I think he plays a great bad guy, just kind of a great over-the-top bad guy.
Right.
I missed that one, too. There's so many movies I haven't seen this year. or last year from 2014 or whatever. I got to get on it. Or was that 2015? Was that earlier this year?
Kingsman was last year.
Okay. Yeah. I'm behind on a number of films I meant to consume. And that was one of them for sure. A couple pieces of trivia here. So apparently, and you can see this, Michael Fassbender was considered for the role.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And Chris Pine, Star Trek's Captain Kirk, was considered.
They wanted a really pretty RoboCop.
Yeah.
Right. Don't shoot me in the face.
Not in the face. Man.
Not in the face.
Come on. I'm Chris Pine.
We need him
with
shorter.
My winning smile. My robot smile.
Shorter with a thicker neck we're looking for. call Chris Pine. But apparently they pulled out. But then it says here, Russell Crowe was considered. Come on.
He's making up stuff, people.
That's not true.
Right.
There's no way they were considering Russell Crowe. Not a chance. Not in his state. There's no way.
Not in his current state.
You need like a thin, tall, square-jawed guy like Peter Weller in there. Right?
I'll tell you though, Peter Weller's ginormous head really played well in the first one.
I love him.
Yeah,
I could watch him eat a bag of chips.
Yeah, right. When he's got the helmet off and his robot body, his head just looks like
it's huge, man.
Two sizes too big for his.
Right, because they wrapped the skin on the outside of the, robotics.
Right, so they could show the wires and stuff, and yeah.
Hugh Laurie was in talks to play Raymond Sellers, who ended up going to Michael Keaton. Contract negotiations broke down between him and the film's producers. Clive Owen was then seriously considered as a replacement. Before Keaton was cast, you can actually see all these guys doing it.
Really wanted a European RoboCop, is what they were going for.
Well, this is the Sellers guy. The Michael Keaton character. And before we go on about him and everybody else in this movie, we need to take a quick break and talk to you about our friends over at Casper.com. Casper is an online retailer of premium mattresses for a fraction of the cost. Casper is revolutionizing the mattress industry by cutting the cost of dealing with resellers and showrooms and passing that savings directly to you, the consumer. Did you know they will send you a mattress for 100 days and you get to try it out? And if you don't like it, you can return it. Painless, easy return if you don't like it. I got one, and I knew right away I wanted it, so I didn't send it back, and I loved it. I have a king, a great big king mattress, and I freaking love it. You really should try it. It's completely risk-free. You get it online, so you're not paying for a bunch of retail space or laying on some showroom mattress you're not sure who's been there before. Try it out, risk-free. They're all made in the USA. Save an additional $50 as one of our audience members by going to casper.com/filmsack and enter the code filmsack. That's casper.com/filmsack. And the promo code, FilmSack. Anyway, so there's that. Also, this is the worst. Here's the worst piece of trivia. Let's share this with you because it'll crack you up. This is the first RoboCop movie to be released in IMAX.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. Groundbreaking.
So what they're saying is it came out, 87. There was no IMAX. Is that what you're telling me?
Right.
Brilliant.
And then they put an action movie in an IMAX theater.
You could say that with so many different other franchises.
Yeah, that's true, right?
This is the first Fantastic Four movie to be released in IMAX.
Hey, I remember another piece of comedy in the movie as Brian hacks up along.
I know. Remember another piece of what?
A little piece of comedy that they tried to inject. It wasn't very funny, but I remember it. Because I wrote it down. That's why I remember it. I don't think your RoboCop infrared readout when you're looking at a drug dealer in the street would say totally stoned as his status.
I knew there had to be some stupidity somewhere there because most of the time it was about individuals' emotional states. Uh-huh. I guess because since we couldn't read it as audience members, we couldn't tell if somebody was upset or maybe he couldn't read it. Anyway, I kept looking for something. That's good. When did that happen?
That when he was... There was a dude kind of early on when he was doing his first few police jobs and there was a drug bust. And he went and found that guy who was dealing drugs and they scanned him and it said criminal record, this and that, and did all this stuff. And then right below it said totally stoned. And I just thought, okay.
Another thing I enjoyed about this movie, I thought I was for such a good ride. As soon as it came on and they showed the MGM cat and they had those weird noises going over. I hope you captured that.
I did a bit.
It's Samuel Jackson warming up as the Pat Novak character.
Did you for a second think that you accidentally clicked the top secret promo for Netflix?
Yeah. like this? Scary movie or something, like some.
Right. Oh, what did I accidentally click on? Because I don't think this is RoboCop.
That was really odd, and they had it timed with the lion.
The cat's meow.
Yeah, that was weird. It really did. It completely threw me off. And I imagine in the movie theater that would have been like, hey, did I walk into the right movie?
It's such a weird thing to do for such a serious movie, like, you know, for a comedy, for a Zucker Brothers thing, or for a Coen Brothers deal. Mm-hmm. You could totally see them doing that. But for this, looking back on that, God, that was out of place.
Yeah, it's still to this moment, I don't think it fit very well. Oh, also, man. Didn't sound like him, but apparently it was him. According to the trivia, this is something he actually does, and they recorded Jackson.
Oh, really?
Now, that's, you know, take it for as a grain of salt, because who knows? Like, that could be bull crap, but that cracked me up when I read that.
Okay, that I like a lot.
I could go for a sequel, though. I'm just saying.
I hope they certainly set it up that way, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, it ends with a total sequel.
Well, and it also ends with him in the cool silver suit, which is kind of cool. Oh, the only other bit of, here's a bit of trivia that maybe Ibbot would appreciate given the musical nature of it, but the very end of the thing, when the credits hit and they end, you expect some kind of, you know, like big, mm-hmm. big, like rock, either rock music or more orchestrated like theme music.
Oh,
instead,
right.
It's I Fought the Law and the Law Won.
Right.
Yeah.
Flash, yeah.
That was great.
That was fun.
That was a great little fit, I thought.
That was the most fun I had in the whole movie.
I don't know. I don't know why I liked
the credits
it.
Three times I enjoyed it so much.
Sadly, this is only hypothetical, but if you lived in a vacuum and there was no other RoboCop, okay, mm-hmm. in a world with no RoboCop before this one, this was the first attempt. I think this may have been awesome in lots of people's eyes.
Oh, my. Yes. It was a competent modern day movie. That if we had zero expectations, I think it would probably have landed in the 75%.
There's something about the tone. There was something about the look of it that really enamored me. And it's more than just my expectations were low for me. I don't know. I'm perfectly willing to admit that I may be alone in this, because I'm usually pretty discerning when it comes to movies like this. But I really liked it. And like actually liked it.
Yeah, I think I said it before. I'll say it again. I think the, even if there was not an original RoboCop, this movie still just lacked all the fun things that you expect from a movie in 2015.
Mm-hmm. And it felt very subdued. And one of the things that pushed that subdued feeling on me was that every time Clara Murphy, played by Abby Cornish, every time she was on screen, she was whispering.
Yeah, there was a lot of whispering going on.
At first I thought, well, she's whispering because she doesn't want her son to hear. But then I noticed no matter where she was at,
yeah, no matter.
Even that one scene where she's, you know, where she's talking to RoboCop in the crowded street. RoboCop, hey,
come on, man, seriously,
Alex, it's me.
She was really whispery. You're right. She was never.
She's, I mean, even the love interest. I mean, she's beautiful, mm-hmm. but in this movie, she's just boring.
Yeah,
and they totally could have had me, because they had that Sinatra music playing where he's out in the. They did a couple of really great shots where he's out.
That's a good song. And
they were, you know, they were intermixing his life and memories, and then doing all these kind of cool wipes with him being in the hospital where they're putting them together. That was a really cool couple of shots. Had some really good shots.
Yeah, I think the movie, even for people who don't like it or found themselves to be a little bored with its unwillingness to take risks or whatever, you have to at least admit there are a few moments that are pretty impressive. Like, I thought that, I don't just mean from a special effects perspective, but that the way that scene evolves and is pretty poignant and well done, and uses just the right amount of sort of CGI and real, and, you know, like is powerful stuff. And then, you know, I'll even admit, even though I really liked it, they pull away from that and they forget to do more of that. And, or at the very least, if according to the director, he's quoted as saying, I would go to the producers with 10 ideas and they would destroy 9 of them and only leave me one.
Right.
So it doesn't sound like it was a very, and sometimes I think that's what happens, is a more boring antiseptic sort of experience comes out of lack of creative control.
Well, yeah. I'm just glad they didn't nix the Ed 209s.
Oh, because, yes, right. Okay. That was a nice, those are always cool to see, and it's such a great robot design. Yeah,
those are awesome.
Great, but horrible, yeah. Horrible. At still,
even in this, yeah, like in the old movie, that stop motion one had all of its own stupid things, but these were great, dude. Just get underneath one and make the other one shoot at it, and that was fun. That's another one of those moments I'm talking cool about. Mix. Like it was that was pretty well done. So I guess I don't know. I come down on the side of. You know, like if you're going to say, all right, what's the better movie, this or John Wick? Well, it's John Wick is a better movie for sure.
So much fun.
There's a lot of other movies I'd say are better than this, but I don't know. This isn't the pile of garbage I was led to believe that it would
be. Right, right. I do think some people are a little bit extreme with their hate. I do agree with that.
And part of it is just them. Like I talked to a guy on Twitter who was so vehement about it, and I assume the entire conversation I was having with him meant that he had seen it. And by the end of it, he's like, I haven't even seen it, and I never will.
Oh,
like,
no way, really?
I'm like, no, hold on.
Okay, you can't do that.
Yeah, you can't talk. He was doing it purely on the remake principle, which means mind it meant you should never remake anything.
See, I've gotten older, I have a very different take on how I feel about remakes, and that is that I think it's necessary. It's absolutely necessary to make those remakes for a story that is so well loved to retell it. I mean, we do it all the time with like Romeo and Juliet. Every generation has this Romeo and Juliet. And the reason why is because you need to see people of your generation act out this story. Mm-hmm. And so I'm totally cool with a reasonable remake. Like RoboCop is in plenty enough time has passed that this new generation needs to be reintroduced to it because they can't watch Peter, you don't know anything about Peter Weller. They don't give a crap about those actors from that generation.
Well, even if it doesn't have the utility you're talking about, the idea of a remake is never a problem for me because I don't feel like it, you know, it's not. Oh, so this new Ghostbusters, everyone's all freaking out about the new Ghostbusters. It's a thing they've never seen. They're all upset. It's all women. That doesn't make sense. This should be a true sequel, whatever.
Right.
And it goes back to what Brian was saying at the top of the show, Ibbot, which I totally agree with, where you can't have it both ways, right?
Right.
But I look at that and go, this doesn't diminish your love for Ghostbusters 1 or your hate for 2 or whatever it may, wherever you may stand on the originals, they're still there. They still exist. This doesn't take those away from you. It doesn't make them worse. They're still good. They still stand alone as the thing that mattered.
What if the opening scene of the brand new Ghostbusters reveals that the first two movies were just a dream? Then it diminishes the.
That's what I was going to say. If it directly destroys the original. See.
Okay, Alien 3. Let's look at Alien 3 as an example.
Okay.
Okay. Because that's a good example. Aliens ends on a pretty positive note, considering what had gone down. Ripley survived. The girl survived.
Hicks survives.
Hicks survives, and the upper torso, neck, and head of Bishop survives.
Right.
And they get onto the ship. They all go into cryo sleep, and off they go. Alien 3 opens.
Before the credits are done rolling.
Hicks is dead. The girl is dead.
Right.
Newt is dead, completely just wiped off the face. Ripley's the only one that survives any of that, and a dog comes and gets hit by the alien that killed all of them, and then now we have the new alien dog hybrid or whatever, which is all good. Everything else, I actually kind of really like that movie, except for that complete just smashing, shattering of characters at the beginning.
It does seem unnecessary too, right? I guess they
just parted ways. They didn't have to destroy.
Well, the problem is you land on a prison planet where Ripley is the only woman and she doesn't have any sort of allies with her
But couldn't they have like jettisoned her or something on accident, or the ship has some kind of malfunction and she gets jettisoned, but everybody else is fine. Well,
The big problem with that is all the lore that I think it was Dark Horse created around the character of Newt. Newt goes on to kind of lead this rebellion kind of thing. And
yeah, that's
not
a good
here
point.
She doesn't.
Yeah. Nope.
they really did screw up they separated those universes. I don't know. I just think that's a good example of when people do that. Wrong.
But did it? So bottom line is, I think where you're going with that is, did Alien 3 affect your enjoyment of Alien 2 and all the struggle that these characters went through to survive and get on that escape pod? And I've got to go back and save Newt. That whole last act of Aliens was Ripley going back to save Newt, who's going to be dead before the credits are done rolling of the next film.
Yeah.
Did that diminish your enjoyment of Aliens?
It did.
Upon the following viewings,
it did in this one way. In subsequent viewings, right at the end as she's kissing her on the forehead and making a little comment and putting her in her cryo sleep and then hopping in hers, and then the screen goes black and we fade out. I can no longer look at that part of it.
Mm-hmm.
Because all the other intentions and motives and getting her safe and all that stuff, those are all still real and true.
Sure,
and,
sure. She
and
didn't know that she was going to be dead in the next, you know, during cryo sleep.
Yeah, but
or
then
she went and went to sleep.
But then all of that, where they do that, I get irritated just knowing what's next. That's all. Mm-hmm. But it doesn't ruin Aliens for me by any stretch.
No.
And new movies being made about aliens, or movies that are being remade directly, like RoboCop or whatever, I just don't have a problem with it. It's fine. It doesn't mean that anything's wrong with what I love. If they make a new Back to the Future, and I hope they, you know, they, if they ever do that, I hope the right people are involved, and I hope it's good. I mean, all those hopes are still there, but it doesn't mean that the original Back to the Future isn't still a classic and amazing.
Sure.
It just means that they screwed up now, or they made it better now, or some people disagree or whatever. Fine. But it doesn't, like, this weird idea that people are robbing our childhood, that idea needs to stop. It's a dumb idea.
Mm-hmm. Well, it really hit its peak when Lucas came out with the new Star Wars. It's like a whole generation cried out and said, no.
Yeah.
But I think we've been kind of on that roller coaster ride of going, what else are people going to destroy? And we've kind of been defensive.
Well, and
he
actually did things that you could at least make the argument. He went in and put Hayden Christensen at the end of Return of the Jedi and took out old man McGillicuddy. Yeah, that guy. Mm-hmm. And put him in his place. Well, that is kind of dicking with it.
Right. Mm-hmm. That is seriously going back and changing. That's going back in time and changing stuff.
Yeah, that's literally what he was doing. So, you know, Empire Strikes Back is the most untouched of the trilogy. Like, he didn't really mess with that. He added a few CGI shots
explosions
and things.
Explosions and, yeah.
And but I actually think that kind of helped it. So that was the one I liked.
Up here.
But as a whole, I don't look at the prequels and go, oh, these just ruined all of Star Wars for me.
Right.
No,
right.
Those are still beloved films, and in their original cuts, they're incredible. So I don't know. It's a nuanced thing. I know a lot of people disagree with me, but this notion that we somehow have ownership over a piece of entertainment we consumed when we were impressionable 8-year-olds,
right,
is dumb. It's dumb.
Yeah. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Let people have what they want to have. You
know what else is dumb?
And it also, go ahead.
No, go ahead. I think
It also kind of goes to show you that just because you get the original director involved with the reboot or the long period of time since the previous movie, it doesn't always mean it's going to work. George Lucas is a great example of that. But Romero, on the other hand, with Mad Max,
yeah,
it kind of proves that it can, that having the original director and having that same feel of the originals is great. Miller. I said Romero.
You said Romero.
Dawn
yeah.
of the Dead.
Yeah.
I would have liked to have seen what Verhoeven would have done with this.
Oh my God. In his elder insane brain.
Why not? Yeah. Right. I mean, I would have too. I would still like to see what his take would be.
Cause he wasn't involved with the Total Recall thing either. Right.
No, I don't think he's had anything to do with
which,
either
by the way,
these.
It was also a very moderate, tepid movie, that Total Recall movie. It was okay.
Again, it was the same kind of thing where, yeah, it was adequate for a movie, and it hit all the things that you need to hit in a movie in 2010, 2011, whenever it came out, but it didn't have any fun to it. And I don't know. Do you think it's maybe just that these stories, you know, like Starship Troopers, it's campy goofiness, right? And mm-hmm. and Total Recall and RoboCop, all campy goofiness that are as integral to the story as the actual plot points.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah. That maybe they're tough movies to remake just because of that.
Yeah. I think what people forgot maybe with these remakes is that remaking a Verhoeven movie is no small task. It's like people didn't go because, ooh, Arnold's in Total Recall.
Right.
Or they did. But what they came away from was like this weird vision from a strange director.
Oh my God, he's pulling a big glowing ball out of his nose.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like,
gotta love that.
Those his movies, eyes are bulging out.
Yeah, that 2-week stuff. These weren't all in the Philip K. Dick book. These are things that Verhoeven said, what would be funny? Yeah, we put the big ball in the nose. And then he made a movie. Oh, crap. Hold on a second. I hear somebody knocking upstairs. I'm supposed to get this. Don't go anywhere.
Is it Randy?
All right. I'm pausing. It's not Randy. I'll be right back. It's only taking 2 seconds. I hope it's not Randy. All right, we're back. Sorry, had to get a thing at the door. Brian says he has a trope.
In honor of Randy, I figured I better bring at least one trope.
All right.
I call it the fuel the chopper trope. Anytime you hear, anytime you hear the director say, fuel the chopper, it's because they're going to go fight outside the chopper. Are they going to get in the chopper? Maybe. Are they going to get away in the chopper? Heck no. Never. Never make it in the plane. Never make it in the chopper. They just fight right outside that spinning wheels and the escalation of the prop spinning around every time.
Every time, yeah. No, that's
even at John Wick.
Yeah, John Wick had that. Die Hard had that. Every movie with a roof had that, I swear.
Right.
Anything with a building where you could get up on top of it, chopper time.
Fuel the chopper.
So, all right. Should we do some clips? You guys want to do some clips?
Oh, you know, let me throw out one quick trope because this is something I wrote down the police captain. No, I'm protecting you for your own safety. You were not authorized to go on that mission. Means she's behind it.
She's on it.
She's kind of the one. Also, it's a trope, but also I liked it. So in the first movie had some of this too, but they, you know, he's programmed. He can't shoot the code reds or whatever. He still finds a way, you know, the willpower comes through and he still does it. But I kind of liked it.
Shoot.
I didn't hate it. I thought that was fine. In fact,
it was a little bit quick.
Well, in the old one, it was, he didn't do it until he had authorization, right? Somebody said, you're authorized. And then he's
no. He didn't just say authorized. He said, you're fired.
Oh,
and
yeah.
That was awesome.
Yeah. That was actually pretty good. Right. No question about it. But I kind of like the idea that ultimately his willpower did overcome this giant machine. His lungs, heart, hand, and head were enough to, you know, to pull it out. I don't know. For whatever reason, that stuff rung with me just fine. Here is your clips. Let's start with this one. What's with... Oh, yeah. Here's the beat. So this is that stuff at the top. Here you go.
Es muy caliente.
Whoa, how's that supposed to play? Sorry.
Is that, I think that's how Fletcher... prepares as well.
I like that idea. I'm going to splice some things together, maybe. Maybe that's what I should do. All right. Here's the iconic theme that shows up very briefly for the opening logo. Here you go. I have to admit, I got a little excited.
Yeah, I like that too. And I wish they would have had more of that, actually, because that was... That was fun. It's some fun music.
Yep. They did it once for the logo and then once for Novak's show.
Well, I felt like they did it one time later on, too, when he was walking through the police department before he became RoboCop.
Oh, he might have then, yeah.
Kinnaman walking through, yeah.
Da, 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 da. It's so great. What a stupid, great theme that is.
It really is.
I freaking love it. All right. Here's White Guy Street Talk. So this is Murphy before... He becomes RoboCop.
These girls got bodies on them, Jerry.
Yo, look, they're clean, all right? You're going to buy this shit or not?
Hey, why you acting so nervous, man? You fishing on us, Jerry?
Yo, Jerry, what up, Jerry?
You fishing? Are you fishing on us? Are you bageling? Are you bageling? Tell me not bageling.
Harry Connick Jr. in here. Get out of here.
What does fishing on you mean? I don't get it. What does that mean?
I don't either.
Yeah. trying to get them to do a certain thing, I'm assuming.
Is it
basically probably because, you know, accusing him of working with the cops, saying that he's fishing, so maybe trying to get more information out of them.
Exactly. Exactly.
Which is basically what he was doing.
Yeah. Exactly what he was doing.
Yeah.
Really weird. All right.
Here's
Batman.
What do your machines feel?
Well, they feel no anger. They feel no prejudice. They feel no fatigue, which makes them ideal for law enforcement.
Beetlejuice, Beetlejuice, Beetlejuice.
I'd love to have a drink with Michael Keaton. He just seems he'd just be fun to hang out with.
Doesn't he, though? I think he's great. I heard an interview with him during the Birdman push, and he does seem like the nicest guy. He seems shocked that anyone gives two shits what he's doing.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
He's just still just sort of like,
I watched him recently. I had not seen this in years. I watched Mr. Mom the other day.
It's good.
I did not realize what a TV movie that was. Oh. There were so many TV actors in that.
Big time. It's fun. That's fun. A fun movie. Yeah. I don't hate that movie. I don't like Multiplicity
much.
More
fun than RoboCop.
Yeah. Here's the dude, and I could never not hear him when he talked as the character, but the guy who plays the kid on How to Train Your Dragon, he was in this. He was the marketing guy, and here's his voice.
We clear $600 billion per annum. In other words, every second that law is in existence, we are hemorrhaging money.
We've got to get these dragons to fight.
When the first time I heard him, I could have sworn, and the camera's kind of pulling back so you could see who's talking because mm-hmm. they're zoomed in on the TV screen. Mm-hmm. I was going to bet that it was Peter McNichol.
That's pretty good.
For sure it was Peter McNichol.
Well, I've got a really interesting Paul Giamatti moment that I'll play.
Oh, really?
Okay. Yeah, and you'll be hard pressed to tell the difference. At least I thought so at the time. Anyway, here's Commissioner Gordon.
We agreed on this a long time ago, Raymond. I wouldn't be asked to develop combat applications. My work here is driven by its own questions.
And your work is brilliant, but your ideas are being underutilized. Look.
You think he'll ever get... I feel like that guy's going to be one of those actors where he'll live to be like 100, and then when he dies, everyone will be upset he never won an Oscar. I'm not mm-hmm. saying this is the movie to do it in, mm-hmm. but... It just feels like he should have been nominated for something, or probably has been, but should have won something by now.
Boy, hearing him in this, like hearing just the audio and not seeing him, though, mm-hmm. you're really able to pick up on the forced stammering, the believability and the forced stammering. Mm-hmm. I don't. You know.
Mm-hmm. And the covering of his accent, his normal accent.
Right. Yeah. That a bit. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
But what's this? I don't know what this is.
Well, there you have it. 5.6 seconds behind scenario failure. Wouldn't buy that for a dollar.
Oh, there you go. I wouldn't buy that for a dollar.
Just in case you forgot.
this is a RoboCop movie.
They really tried to shoehorn that line in there somewhere, didn't they?
Yeah, it felt a little forced.
I would buy that for a dollar.
It was a little forced. Here's Batman freaking out.
And his life depends on it, and the future of Omnicorp depends on it, so get your ass back to China and get it fixed. I don't care how you do it, just go do it.
Jeez.
Wow.
Calm down. Not like
China.
Batman to lose his mind like that. Here's a great line.
Hey, doctor, what happens if I tase an exoskeleton with a little asshole inside?
Mm. Oh, yeah.
Oop.
When the police... I have a really important clip here. When the police tried to arrest Brian Ibbett during his prom in 1987.
It was such a fateful night.
It really was. This is how that went down when they tried to arrest him. Whoops. Here you go.
We can't take him off the street. This is what I'm saying. He's a hit. A big, fat, stinking hit.
I kind of wedged that in there. I couldn't think of a good...
A big, fat, stinking hit.
All right. Tell me this doesn't sound like Paul Giamatti to you. Okay? Right. So I'm about to play it.
All right. First off, it's not a man. Okay? It's property of Omnicorp. And politics are the least of your concern. I mean, this thing solved its own murder.
Don't you think?
Yeah, totally. Right, when you're listening for it, you can totally hear it.
And that's Haley Joel. What's his name? Joel Haley.
Haley Joel. Jackie Earl Haley.
Jackie, that's it. all right. Dead or alive, you're coming with me.
Dead or alive, you're coming with me.
Kind of, dead or alive. You knew they were going to do some of that.
Yeah.
All right. Our final two bits are Samuel L. Jackson yelling and then whining. Or no, telling people to stop whining.
I love that.
Here you go. Whoops.
The fact that this mother is not serving time in some federal penitentiary is a huge, hot, heaping pile of horse.
I like that they do the double syllable beeping on the F bomb.
Yeah, the mother effer. That's pretty good.
Because usually they'll just go, it'll go, beer.
Yeah.
Like they'll leave the last part of the word so you know what he's saying.
Mother.
Beep, beep, just in case. We need an extra beep in there. Beep, beep.
That's right. That's pretty funny.
We need to beep per syllable. Apparently, that was their theory.
I like it.
Uh-huh.
And then here's him finally. 3 seconds of him to finish us out.
Stop whining.
I like that. I'm gonna use
that.
Yeah,
that's a keeper on the board, too.
That's a keeper for sure. All right, that's it. Oh, this Fletcher sent this.
¿Dónde está la biblioteca?
All right, and then this.
RoboCop es muy caliente.
There you go. So, whatever. I don't know why he sent me those, but I love them anyway. Hey, that means it's time for the freaking this thing. The Film Sack checklist goes like this. Sweet Sam Jackson wig, check. Nice use of the Ed 209s, check. And unable to hear guy without hearing How to Train Dragon voice, check. Star Trek stuff I didn't get from Daryl because we had a last minute movie change and he sent me the previous movie but not this one. I think I got to him too late, so I couldn't think of anybody obvious who had been in some sort of Star Trek thing, and we are in 2014. That's going to be less and less, I think. your crossovers. I don't know. I could be wrong, but seems like it's going to be harder and harder down the line. Soundtrack grade, to give it an IWIS for it is what it is. It's fine. It's not special. It's not terrible. It's just kind of a soundtrack. Let's do the Twitter post. This is where you guys, in 140 characters or less, sum it up. Let's start with Dunaway.
Sure, why not? RoboCop, like expecting Transformers for your birthday, but grandma brings you mother effing GoBots. Transforms into a scooter?
Did you have GoBots when you were growing up, or did you have Transformers?
I had GoBots. Let me tell you something about GoBots. Transformers are a very complex machine. GoBots, you twist them twice and, hey, it's a scooter. Twist, now it's a robot.
Yeah, they were kind of lame that way. Or better if you like the simplicity. Sure.
Kids with short attention spans.
GoBots.
Can't got time to be transforming stuff.
Yeah. The great GoBot Transformer debate rages on in 2015. Now Brian Ibbett.
RoboCop, the Hurt Toaster.
The Hurt Toaster.
Yeah, that's like better than my other alternate titles here. Black is the New Silver. Or
I like it.
Sirius Black.
No.
Oh, look at the connection I made. All right. We have emails. Quick ones here from John Brandenburg, who says this. Scott, I'm listening to every episode up to this point, and I'm trying to get caught up. During your episode on Swashbuckler, you said there are no good pirate movies. Wouldn't your favorite movie, Waterworld, be considered a pirate movie? Has lots of water. Yarr. Check. Crappy English. Check. Dude with an eye patch. Check. The list goes on. What say you about this? If you address this on your show already, my bad. Keep on entertaining us. Can you give the Lost in Space movie a look? When I was 13, that movie came out. I remember loving it. Would love to hear how it holds up. Thanks. Yes, we will watch for that. And
is it? Yeah, but say, is it out?
No. I don't think it's streaming anywhere.
I'll make sure it's on our watch list, though, like our keep an eye out for it list.
We have an ever-growing list like that, and we really hope some of those come through. Yeah, I see where he's coming from. In a lot of ways, it is a pirate movie, I guess. It's, you know, people on boats, and I mean, it's obviously this post-apocalyptic
thing. People on boats, that's all you need. It's a pirate movie.
But, you know, you have marauders on those jet skis. What are they if not just, you know, other pirates trying to get aboard and steal your stuff and, you know, he's right. It's very piratey. I'll give him that. I mean, they don't go as far as to go yo ho ho and drink rum and act like idiots, but it has its roots in pirates. It's kind of like so many movies that are basically westerns at their heart. It's sort of like that. Brian Huff, B Huff, who we saw at Nerdtacular, great guy.
Yep.
Sent this in, says, you said on the last episode that everyone that has that movie. Oh, what is this movie? Oh, he's talking about Blade Runner. I forgot the subject.
Oh, yeah.
Says they haven't managed to see it yet. And for me, that is Blade Runner. So we're always talking about movies we haven't seen. Blade Runner is his. You discussed a bit on the different versions of the movie, and I found no less than 3 on iTunes. As someone who has never seen any version, would you please give me the most enjoyable viewing experience? Love the show. B. Huff. So I'd say that director's cut's the way to go.
I think so, too. Right. You don't get the narration.
Mm-hmm.
Which
he hated, by the way. He did
I
not
know.
Want
and there's
that
parts
there.
Of it I kind of like, but for the most part, yeah, you don't want it, and you don't get the happy ending. I'm with you on the director's
nothing
cut. But aren't there like 3 director's cuts?
There are
because there's the director's cut and the final cut. What's the final cut?
I don't know. Here, let's see.
Let's see.
The final is the final cut, not the one that made it.
Blade Runner.
The 117 minutes, one extra minute longer, is the only.
What happens in that minute?
It's the only version over which Ridley Scott had complete artistic control, as the director's cut production did not place Scott directly in charge.
All right. So you get 1 minute.
All right, then.
What is the difference, though? Where is it? Let's see.
Okay, the final cut says it was released in 2007 briefly in theaters and then put on Blu-ray and HD DVD.
Oh, here you go. Here is the final cut contains the original full-length version of the Unicorn Dream.
Oh.
Which had never been in any version and has been restored.
And that's the only difference?
Only difference in the final cut.
Weird.
So watch that one. So you get the full-length version of the Unicorn Dream.
You got to understand why they had the unicorn on the front of the box. If you don't watch that, you won't
know. It's true.
There's an entire entry in Wikipedia called Versions of Blade Runner. It's like an actual article. It's huge, too, and it goes into every detail. So you may want to consult that, but I think the consensus is the one that Ridley Scott wanted you to see, which sounds like Final Cut, that's the one to do. Another good example of this change would be Dark City.
Oh, yeah.
It's an amazing movie. Mm-hmm. Alex Troyes movie. I love that movie. But the first, the theatrical run had Kiefer Sutherland narration, very similar to the way Blade Runner did. And he hated the director, never wanted that. The studio made him do it. And he took it out in the cut, in the director's cut. And it's so much, and it's not just that, but it just feels better. So I'd say go with the director stuff
really
for sure.
I like that movie a lot.
Yeah. Oh, Dark City, dude. Mm-hmm. We should watch it for this show just so we can
rave
about it.
I do want to see it, but I have just this bad feeling it's just not going to hold up.
I think it holds up great. I think I think it's a pretty timeless thing.
Let's see. Really is that streaming? Is the question.
I have Blu-ray, but who knows?
I do too.
My wall just made a weird noise.
I saw it on TV.
Wow. Weird. Not even. How is that possible?
What?
It's not available on.
Like iTunes or anything?
Like on Netflix. Like not even as a disc. How is that possible?
Maybe it was never released on. It's older than you think.
That's.
It's not that old.
Not that old.
It's,
there's what, older like, movies like, on there.
98.
There's older movies on there, 90, right?
98 isn't that old. That's pretty. No. We've seen plenty of older stuff.
I don't get it. It's just not even available. How? Well, let me see here. Hold on. I might be in the wrong place here. I think I'm in home. My list, new arrivals. Yeah, it is just not
weird.
Nothing.
Weird. Yeah. Well, I know you can buy it on Amazon. If it ever goes streaming, I think we definitely squeeze
for
it in.
Sure, it's yeah.
Really cool movie. Our next film is Return of the Dragon. I don't know anything about this. Is this
Return of the Dragon.
Is this a Bruce Lee piece of business?
Oh, it'd have to be, right?
Is that the... Oh, wait a minute. Yeah.
Return of the Dragon.
Yes, it is a Bruce Lee, directed by Bruce Lee, written by Bruce Lee, starring Bruce Lee and Chuck Norris.
Why can't I find this? Is it Return of the Dragon?
Yeah, Return of the Dragon. 1972 film.
I see Way of the Dragon.
No, that was that's. Oh, well, I think maybe that's what they call it here. I think Return of the Dragon is the actual.
You're right. AKA Return. Okay, you're right.
Right.
Yeah. Why? That's weird. Why is nothing showing up on Netflix?
I don't know. Your Netflix is broken.
Check in next week when we answer the trivia question. Why is it called The Way of the Dragon?
Yeah, we'll figure that out and more next week right here on FilmSack. FilmSack.com is the website. Voicemails come to us at 801-471-0462. Leave one. We'll play it on the show. You can email us, FilmSack@gmail.com. We're on Twitter at FilmSack. Leave us a review on iTunes, Stitcher, or wherever podcasts are available. That's going to do it for us. For me, for Brian, and for the traveling Randy. Traveling Randy. Which is both a state of mind and what Randy's doing. Mm-hmm. We'll see you next time.
I wouldn't buy that for an hour.
This show is part of the Frog Pants Network. Get more at frogpants.com. Hip, hip, McRae.
What's your name, please?
I'm Mary.
What is going through your mind?
And I used to be a smoker.